blowing right through it. Having a great time. Welcome back. Welcome to the program. I am Jim Rome. We start hour number three. It is a three-hour program. Coming up next segment, I've got a linebacker with the Arizona Cardinals, Jordan Hicks. In the meantime, this show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. By Quicken Loans, Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. You know what the telephone number is. You know it's good in the U.S. You know it's good in Canada. You know not to waste our time. Come strong. Elevate the conversation. In the meantime, speaking of conversations, I'm joined right now by a World Series champion, a two-time All-Star, more than 2,000 career strikeouts, a 16-year MLB vet. He's an analyst for MLB Network and Marquee Sports Network in Chicago. He is host of Off the Mound with Ryan Dempster. You can follow Ryan on Twitter at Dempster46. Ryan, it's been a minute or so since you and I have spoken. How are you doing, and what has this season been like for you, Ryan?
Hey, Jim. How are you, man?
Good, dude. How about you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. The season's been it's been awesome, you know, to be able to have baseball. Strange, weird, odd, but, you know, to be able to be fortunate enough to watch these men go out and play games every day, and everybody that puts all the work into it, it's been unique, and I guess that can be the best perspective I want to try and take on it.
You know, I want to ask you what it must be like for them to compete and work and live in the type of environment that they are right now. Before I go there, it's no surprise to me that you've been doing really well as an analyst for MLB Network and Marquee Sports Network. At the same time, the transition is not as easy as you make it look. What's it been like for you to go from being an active player to an analyst?
Yeah, it's not easy, and it is a transition period, and you have to give up the fact that you're not a player anymore. As much as you want to hold on to that, but you always have the feelings of that and have the respect of, you know, what the writers do, what the media does. I thought during my career, I had a good relationship with them, and I understand it's a job for both sides to do, and sometimes there's difficult questions to ask. And I wanted to just, you know, bring this light of the off-the-mound aspect to that. And I love talking baseball, Jim. You know me, man. It's a great game. It's been my whole life since I was a little kid, so I think that's probably made it the easiest, is that I enjoy doing it.
Ryan Dempster, my guest, I do know that about you. Also, I think that you bring something to it. Obviously, you have a point of view, which is different. You've got an experience. But I can even make the argument that it's one thing to do it, but it's another to do it comfortably. And you've made it look pretty easy. Fact of the matter is, you grew up idolizing Johnny Carson. How old were you when you first started to watch The Tonight Show? And what was it about that particular host that you liked so much?
I just thought, I thought Johnny was, really poignant to make the show fun and light. And I was a little kid. I honestly, if I try to recall the year, I don't know, 6, 7 years old, maybe right around there, maybe a little bit older. And just like, it was such a great thing to go to bed laughing like that. Like you watch the show and you're like, oh, I hated that guy's movie, but man, that was funny. Or it gave me a different opinion of some guest that I might've thought one way about. And I just loved it. I just thought it was great. I couldn't wait for Burt Reynolds to get on when they do the shaving cream bit down his pants. And I'm just like on the floor, a little kid watching this, right? It's like the funniest thing since I don't know what. It was the funniest thing. So yeah, I am comfortable with it. I know I'm probably not everybody's cup of tea, but I've also put a lot of hard work into it, man. I took improv classes, do stand up, do it in Chicago, New York, New Jersey. I know how hard it is to try and do that. And I'm as green as it gets. So I'm just trying to, you know, work hard at it to show the respect to the other people that do this job.
So, Ryan, what's more nerve-wracking, getting up and doing stand-up in a club or getting up on the bump and taking the ball for a game 7 in a critical postseason series?
Two totally different feelings. On the field. The first time I ever got up to stand-up, it was the scariest, like the most intimidating thing. It was more intimidating than my first appearance. And I was like numb to that first appearance. So it was definitely nerve-wracking. I had told this little joke about it. It was during the big dig, and the bar owner threw me a layup. He's like, hey, talk about the little orange cones all over the city. And I was like, oh, you mean the official state tree of Massachusetts?
Right.
And they were just everywhere, you know. It was like, hey, the big dig. And it went well, and then I guess that made me comfortable. But I was sweating bullets, just dripping like a July start in the afternoon in Florida. It was great.
That's got to be scary. But you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable, and you got to put yourself out there. Ryan Dempster is joining us, but I can see that. Now, You have talked about the fact that part of what you want to do in your job is help actual or bring the actual emotion of baseball players to the viewers so they can understand what the people who play the game really are dealing with. Like, give me an example. How would you describe the emotions of pitching in a tight game in late September? What would every single at-bat feel like when you're on the mound?
Well, I don't know. I think that's what I'm trying to bring, is that it's different for everybody. And everybody handles that emotion differently, and everybody's going through real life stuff differently. You know, athletes are great. They're superstars. They're incredible, and some of them are so good at channeling that in certain directions, and other people struggle with real life things. And in that moment, we don't necessarily know those are going on. And, you know, it's important for people to realize that, and that person out there is ultimately doing the best they can. When I'm on the mound and somebody's 60 feet, 6 inches away from me, on the 1st and the 15th, we got paid. We were both professional baseball players. One guy has to win, one guy has to lose. I'm actually going to win a lot more. And you know, I think, you know, the seeing it too from that side, being a fan of the game, and, you know, boo somebody for not hustling, cool, but don't boo somebody for striking out. Like, why? What good does that help anybody? Does it make him go like, man, I really got to get a hit now? He knows that. He doesn't get down to first base? Go for it. Yeah. Yell at him. If you don't want this job, I'll take it. Like, I'll have it if you don't want to run hard down to first base four times. But because I strike out with the bases loaded, like, you know how bad that hurts me as the batter or the pitcher that gives it the grand slam? You know, and I think showing that the next time it happens, that maybe somebody goes, oh, you know, all right, like, I know he's trying. I know he's giving everything he got.
Right. You know? It is a game of failure. I get exactly what you're saying. If you want to boo effort and a guy's dogging it, that's one thing, but it is a game of failure. So I think you make a really good point. Like, so what do you think the virus and the fear of the virus, how has that impacted players? Like, you know, and you kind of touched on this, guys can compartmentalize things. Guys can block things out, but professional athletes are always dealing with, they're people. They're dealing with stuff like the rest of us are dealing with stuff. How do you think that's impacted the players? Can they block it out, or is it not that simple when it comes to the virus?
I think it's hard. I think it's hard on everybody, right? Everybody in the world dealing with this. It's a hard thing. And then all the protocols that go into going out there and playing and being safe and having families and, you know, having babies and moms and grandmas, and it's hard. I'm so close with my parents, and, you know, we don't get to see each other. So for those guys, it's the same way. It's the same type of things. And I think it's every athlete, every sport. I think it's everybody that goes to work at Home Depot, or they are working at a bank, or whatever they're doing, professor at school. I think everybody's having a tough time with it. And those players are no different out there, and they might struggle, right? Like, somebody might be hitting 200 and we're like, this guy sucks. Why? Why does he suck? Maybe he just, you know, is having a tough time with the pandemic right now, and he just can't mentally focus, even though all of us tell him he just should, because it's totally fine. But you know what I'm saying?
Yes, like, I think, absolutely.
I think they're really, you know, and bravo for them for even giving it a try.
Ryan Dempster is joining us. I do know what you're saying. And then even that brings us to the question of mental health, where not long ago, professional athletes would never even broach that subject and not go there because they didn't want to be perceived as weak, when that's not weakness either. That's a real thing. What about, Ryan, the Cubs and the White Sox? They both clinched playoff spots. It's only the second time since 1906 that the Chicago teams have been in the postseason at the same time. What's it like seeing both of them in the playoffs?
How about if they match up in the World Series and it's not even played in Chicago? No fans can go, and it will be played in Arlington. Oh, man.
Weird.
Let's have a big, huge viewing somewhere, Grant Park. I think it's awesome. I think it's great for the city. When I remember those times playing against those teams when they were really, really good and we were really good. And it's fun. It's a great competition. And it's something nice for people going through a tough time in the world to be able to be like, hey, my baseball team's in the playoffs. Yeah, mine too. All right, let's go. Like, it's a really cool thing. The White Sox got a young, dynamic team on the south side too. They're going to be good for a while. And the Cubs will always be good.
We're talking to Ryan Dempster for a few more moments, working with MLB Network, among others. Now, there's so many moments I could talk to you about with relation to your career, but if we go back to that moment when you were pitching for the Red Sox at Fenway and you hit Alex Rodriguez, what do you remember about that moment?
Wow. What do I remember about that moment? I remember being pretty calm through it all. Yeah, I don't know. I had a different perspective than I think a lot of people did on that moment. You know, like I threw at him four times and things like that. I threw at him behind him the first one. I didn't want to, wasn't headhunting anybody. And then two, that I was just like, I'm not going to throw it down and away. You saw what happened the next time. I threw it down and away. You hit it over the center field wall. So it was a better play inside, but then I just 3-0, got 3-0. And yeah, I don't know. I just did it. And looking back, it brought our team closer together, believe it or not, I thought, you know, and it was really cool. And we were able to win a World Series. And that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not looking to start anything at all. The reaction of the crowd in Boston was something, man. They went nuts.
Well, yeah,
they went nuts because it was A-Rod.
We were having some cold ones, and my brother told me, hey, man, like, how fun would that be at Fenway to hit A-Rod his first at-bat? Like, he's with the Yankees, you're with the Red Sox. I was like, yeah, do perfect. And then, you know, all the preceding events started to take place. I'm like, whoa. And that just happened to be the first time. That was pretty – it's like, well, then it's fate, right? Like, if this is what we were talking about in the offseason, then it's got to happen. So, yeah, it was good old-fashioned rivalry baseball. It fired both teams up. They played really well the rest of the way. We won a World Series. I got the best paid five-day vacation I ever got. It was awesome.
Not only that, but one more thought, Ryan. The bullpen's empty, and you know Johnny Gomes is always at the ready. Johnny Gomes will go.
Behind the shortstop, Jim.
Oh, dude, he's always ready. He is one of my all-time favorite guys to talk to. I love him. That 2013 team was loaded with great characters. So what was he like as a teammate, and what was the chemistry like on that 2013 team?
Well, it was great. It was great from day one of spring training. We just, like, right away hit it off. I don't know if we all knew each other from different teams and the guys that were still there and coming off of the rough year in 2012. And Johnny really took hold of the, I'm going to bring us all close together and let's eat together. Let's go for meals. Let's say hi to everyone. We're at work today, guys. You know, and like, I remember the first day of pitchers and catchers, and he's walking into the weight room area and I'm coming out of the shower and I just like, how you doing, Johnny? He's like, just another day closer to the parade, Ryan. And I was
great.
Like, we're going there, huh? And he goes, yep, that's where we're going all year. He would just say that, like, every once in a while. Guys, another month, and we get that parade. Like, it was just great. And he really brought that. I think collectively we brought that as a unit. We had a bunch of guys who easily bought into that. And, yeah, really cared for each other. If you look statistically at that team, it wasn't necessarily the greatest numbers. I mean, Poppy raked, and Petey had a good year, Ellsbury. But other guys had average years, but it was, like, always the right time. Like, you know, Victor Reno with the big grand slam. But that became moments where, like, we talked about four-run homers. We never talked about grand slams, just hitting four-run homers. And then they happened. And we were a true team of, if you believe it, you can achieve it. We didn't just – we said it, and then we made it happen. It was great.
You guys spoke
it. It was magical. And Johnny led the way doing that. He really did. He was incredible at it.
You guys were able to speak that into existence. Let me finally ask you, going back to Chicago for a minute, when David Ross was hired as manager, one of the things that you referenced was a story from back in the day when he told a teammate in Boston, quote, don't ever confuse my kindness for weakness. What do you remember about that moment, and what did that tell you about Ross as a person and how he would approach being a manager?
Yeah, just that he was comfortable having the uncomfortable conversation or the uncomfortable moment. And man enough to not let it carry over and fester into the next interaction. Like, I thought it was really awesome. Like, I never saw him be that way to that guy again. I saw him do nothing but, like, look out for him and try to help him and make him be a better player. And I just was like, that's awesome. Like, never felt this grudge. And just the way he was trying to win every pitch on the bench, like, while he wasn't playing. Like, and it was really cool to be around, and I just saw that leadership and the way he carried it. And a lot of people forget he got a big concussion and was, like, out for a while that year, and he just came back with that attitude and that vigor even more when he came back, and he was crucial. Salty caught a ton of games, and then come playoff, and David just showed tremendous leadership, saying things like throwing a fastball, guys, like telling us, so the starting staff and pitchers meetings, like, you have to throw a fastball in a fastball count when everybody in the ballpark knows you're throwing a fastball. Locate it and we'll get them out. Like, whoa, okay, first of all, simple as can be. So the easiest thing we can do is just do that. And then second of all, it's the emotion of the confidence behind you that he believes you can do that. So then you're like, yeah, chest out even more. And then you just have to go out there and execute it. And then you execute it and it happens. And then you're like, oh, I can do that again. He was just, yeah, just a great teammate, a great leader. And I knew, you know, and I'm sure he's going to have the downs with the ups, but I just don't see those downs being anywhere near the ups that he'll have. He's just a good communicator and a good person and great baseball man.
That's a really good story. A World Series champion, two-time All-Star, 16-year MLB vet. And again, you can check Ryan Dempster out on MLB Network, Marquee Sports Network in Chicago, and host of the Off the Mound with Ryan Dempster. Ryan, good to get caught up. It had been way too long. Great to have you on the show. Thanks so much for doing that.
Absolutely, Jim. Great to talk with you, man. Thanks a lot.
You too, Ryan. Great talking to you. Nice to have you back. Again, that had been too long. Ryan Dempster talking a little baseball. Okay, when we come back, we'll talk some Arizona Cardinal football. I love the Cards this year. They're in football's nastiest, dirtiest division, and they're going to have a say in that nasty, dirty division this year. Believe that. So last week is in the books. Now it's time to review the tape and get ready for this week. There is no better place to get in on all the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. To add to this week's excitement, DraftKings has a free shot at millions of dollars in total prizes that are up for grabs. If you have not tried DraftKings yet, head to the App Store right now because you do not want to miss this. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before. Every run, every pass, every catch means more with DraftKings. It's simple. You simply pick up your lineup. You pick it. You stay under the salary cap. You see how your team stacks up against the competition. DraftKings is paid out billions with a B of dollars since 2012. They know a thing or two about cold, hard cash. Download the DraftKings app right now. Use the code Rome for a limited time. New users get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes this week, but you have to use my code Rome, R-O-M-E. Only at DraftKings. Make it rain. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. You should be all over that. Use the code name Rome.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I am Jim Rome. I said I would go back to back, and that's exactly what we're doing. Former MLBer Ryan Dempster, last segment. We are joined right now by a linebacker for the Arizona Cardinals. He is a Super Bowl champion. He had 10 tackles in Sunday's win over Washington. For the season, 16 tackles, 2 for a loss, a career high last year, 150 tackles, a sack and a half, 11 tackles for a loss, 3 INTs, 2 forced fumbles, and a fumble recovery last season. He leads all active linebackers in interceptions since 2015 with 10. He was the 84th pick overall back in 2015 at Texas. Arizona's out fast. They're 2-0. They're in first in the NFC West, and they are hosting Detroit Sunday. Jordan Hicks is my guest. Jordan, good to have you back. How are you?
Great. Appreciate the intro.
Appreciate you coming back, Jordan. So 2-0.
Absolutely.
Arizona's 2-0 for the first time in 5 seasons. How much better is life when you roll out of the rack, you wake up, you go to work, and you are 2-0?
It's so much better. You know, you play this game to win, and really, Monday and Tuesday are, determined mood wise based on how you perform on Sunday. So, you know, being 2-0 is obviously great. Got a lot of work to do moving forward. Got a tough season ahead of us, but we're taking it one at a time.
We're talking to Jordan Hicks. What about that win over Washington? That was a game where you held them scoreless in the first half and to just 3 points for the first 3 quarters. You'd probably tell me that you were not thrilled about allowing a couple of TDs in the fourth. But overall, how pleased were you with the way the defense showed up this past Sunday?
Yeah, obviously there's things we feel like we can improve, especially with it being only the second game and performing like that. We were pleased in quite a bit of aspects, but a lot of what we're predicated on is stopping the run, and something that we want to do better is that. But we fixed what you notice is we fixed a lot of things from last year, from this point to that point, and so that's really what we're focused on. We're taking it one game at a time, one day at a time, just making sure that we're trying to detail our craft, and obviously the outcome is determined on that.
Jordan Hicks is my guest. I like that. You're looking to detail your craft. Now, you're a captain this year. My sense is, with or without that title, you are always going to look to lead from the front. That said, what does the title mean to you? And knowing the respect that comes along with that, how does that make you feel?
Yeah, it means a lot. For me to say that, you know, me being a captain is something that I take lightly would be a lie. You know, I put a lot of weight in the respect and the leadership that I carry out there on the field. And you know, for me, it's always been a goal. It's been something that I've strived to become. And again, it's respect. You know, I say it all the time. I play this game for respect and to leave a legacy, you know, for those behind me and for my children. And so, you know, when you get something like that, that is a statement of respect. So, you know, it's appreciated. It's by the players and means a lot.
You know, I get a sense of how much the game means to you and how much your craft means to you. You and I have talked in the past about your time in Philadelphia and the bad luck that you had when it came to injuries. Then you break out last year with 150 tackles, which was third most in the NFL. How satisfying was it to have a season like that where you were impacting the game, helping your team week in and week out?
Yeah, very, very satisfying. You know, at the end of the day, Jim, it was about health. You know, I was able to play every snap last year. And I think, you know, the stats correlate with my ability to stay on the field. You know, I've always said as long as I can be out there, things will fall into place. And that's what happened last year. Obviously, we didn't perform the way we wanted to, you know, and obviously that's where we're trying to, you know, get better and correct. But personally, you know, my ability to show that I can stay on the field, you know, and create that momentum moving into this year, you know, meant a lot. And I think it's propelled you know, myself in the right direction.
Yeah, it's like you want to have that momentum, Jordan, but the offseason was just so unusual, and it turned out to be unlike any other offseason that came before it. Like, you had some trips that you had planned, everything went up in the air. What was the experience like for you, and how did you and your family approach this particular offseason?
Yeah, it was completely different, obviously, for everybody. We hunkered down. I'm from Austin, Texas. We hunkered down in Austin, my family and I was lifting in the garage, running around the neighborhood, finding a field to do my drills on. You know, it was really a test of how much of a pro, you know, you can be. And, you know, a lot of the facilities around me were closed, so I was isolated. I had to do everything on my own. And so got creative, had some people in my corner that helped me out. But it was completely different. And, you know, it's therapeutic to be back playing football around people, you know, getting back to normal life.
You know, that's got to be the case. What's it like? I mean, if it's therapeutic being around people and having that close proximity and doing the thing you love most, I get that. What's it like doing that, though, in front of an empty stadium?
We've had a lot of conversations on it. It's different. It is. You know, you watch the games on TV, and it's actually louder. The crowd noise seems louder on the TV than it actually is in person. In person, it's quiet in those stadiums, and so, you know, it's an adversity that, you know, we're all facing, and you know, whoever faces it the best is going to come out on top. And you know, it's just it's part of the new normal that we're having to deal with now. And for us, you know, we haven't made an excuse. We've just, you know, it is what it is, and we're looking past it.
You know, Jordan, I was saying on the NFL on CBS, I had an appearance this past Sunday, and one of my takes was about Kyler Murray, and I said, for my money, Lamar Jackson, pound for pound, is not the most electric guy in the NFL. Patrick Mahomes is not even the most electric player. I'm not saying that Kyler is yet in their class. I'm saying, for my money, he is the most electrifying athlete I've seen in a long, long time. As a linebacker, what do you think when you watch him? What impresses you the most about his game?
Well, I remember, you know, you could have a long list. I remember last year going against Kyler for the first time and, you know, him sitting in the pocket. And, you know, when I'm a linebacker, I'm trying to read the eyes of a quarterback, and it's tough because he's so small that you're, you know, and he's able to maneuver in the pocket, that you don't see the ball pop out until the last second. You know, you can't see his eyes, and the ball just pops out of the pocket, and he is putting those balls right exactly where they need to be. I think the most impressive thing to me, and I see it day in and day out, is his ability to put the ball exactly where it needs to be. Obviously, he's athletically gifted in every which way, you know, fast, and the offense is, you know, tough to guard. But when you've got a quarterback that can put it wherever it needs to be, off his back foot, on the run, sitting in the pocket, any type of situation, you know, I think that's what makes you special.
I mean, Jordan, isn't that so true? Like, you would know this, anybody would know this if they watched him at Oklahoma. Anybody would know this if they watched him last season. It's amazing to me that anybody would sleep on his arm. Like, far be it from me to say, but this guy's arm talent is crazy. There's no throw that this guy can't make.
And it's, you know, he shoots it from the hip, and he's confident, and he believes in every throw that he makes, and you know, we're right there with him. We believe he can do it, you know, and we see it every single day.
So, Jordan, what about the defense really quickly? How has it felt defensively for you with the Cards? Like, do you know what the identity of the defense is? And if so, how would you describe it?
Yeah, I think every year is different. I would still say, especially with the off season and not having preseason games, I think we're still navigating that. I think since day one, though, the thought process and the mindset has been attacking, physical, and executing type of defense, style of defense. We want to come after people. We want people to see different looks, and you know, we want to be physical at the point of attack. And you know, at the end of the day, defense, there's so many different defenses. The best ones are the ones who are physical and the ones who can execute. And, you know, that's who we want to be. We want to be dominant in that way.
Jordan Hicks joining me for a few more moments. So let me ask you this. You've been through a team growth process in the past, like you were in Philadelphia. That team wins 7 games in 2016 and then the Super Bowl the next year. What do you remember about that process? And do you see any similarities with what's going on in Arizona right now?
It's wild because I do. You know, it's interesting. We had that year, we had a rookie quarterback and we had a first-time head coach, you know, coming in together, new offense, new guys on the team. And we went through that same scenario last year. So it's kind of my second time being in this. And what we were able to do and what we've done here is bring in a lot of veteran leadership, add to, you know, the guys and the scheme and, you know, really detail, like I said, detail the craft. Year one in any system, when it's brand new is tough to grasp. But when you're able to have that second year and be able to detail it and understand it deeper, and again, it goes back to identity. Now we can find our identity. Now we can understand who we're going to be, who we want to be, and take the next step. And, you know, obviously, it's two completely different teams, two completely different scenarios, but there are similarities in there that you see and that are encouraging. And, you know, at the end of the day, I'm a veteran that's been in that situation that has to lead and push us to that, because one thing we had on that team was a lot of veteran leadership pushing us through the tough times. So, you know, adversity strikes with every team, and the best ones who handle it come out on top.
Jordan Hicks, my guest. One last thought. I want to ask you about something off the field. Through your church in Arizona, you and your wife have supported so many families in the community as it relates to COVID. You also got involved with Austin Pets Alive. It's a shelter in Austin, Texas, and you took care of all the adoption fees for people looking to adopt and provided a care package for them as well. Why was that something that was so important to you and something you wanted to support? And then what was the response like?
Yeah, well, you know, what we were all going through that time, and still are at this moment, you know, of uncertainty, seeing people's lives being turned upside down, and jobs being lost and homes being lost and so much turmoil in this country that, you know, we wanted to help. And you know, the things that we love are people and animals. You know, they've touched our lives and you know, every which way. And so we reached out to our church and told them we wanted to do a match, and we maxed out the match, and we were able to fund 2 to 3 days worth of COVID testing at the church, And then, you know, with Austin Pets Alive, they were scrambling because they take in all these animals and they didn't have really anywhere to put it. So they were asking for adoptions. And so we did a campaign with them, and it was the response we got was unbelievable. We had, I think we tripled the average in a month of what a normal month looked like for adoption. So it was awesome. It shows the heart of, you know, the communities that we live in, and the people that we're around. So, you know, we're just, you know, we want to help. And that really was the heart behind it.
Such good stuff. Arizona 2-0 on the year. They're in first in the NFC West. They're at home against Detroit on Sunday. He is a linebacker for the club and a Super Bowl champion, Jordan Hicks. Jordan, so good to have you back. Appreciate you in that conversation as always. Thanks so much for doing that.
Thanks, Jim.
Have a great day, Jordan. Thank you. Appreciate you. Jordan Hicks. Love Arizona. I know it's just two games. I love these guys. I love the changes they made. I like what they're doing defensively. Kyler Murray, to me, is pound for pound the most electric guy in the league. I can't stop looking at him every time he's on the field. And he's getting better and better. And he and DeAndre Hopkins already on the same page. Can you imagine what his upside is going to be having a receiver like that? They have done a great job of building that thing. And I'm telling you, I said it on the NFL on CBS. Kyler Murray is going to factor in the MVP race. And they're going to factor in the NFC West in a nasty, nasty division. When we come back, I've got the ATP for you. Also, can't wait to push out today's episode of the Jim Rome podcast. 144 of these things. I'm proud of all of them. And especially this one, Steve Smith Sr. 89, chopping it up for over an hour. And as interesting as he has ever been, and that's always been a really different cat. And I mean that in the best way. I love Steve Smith. So we will have that for you a little bit later on, right when the show is over. Wednesday is an ATP day, so let's do that right now. Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. In fact, I've got a few. First one reads, my dude, when you pull out the grill or the smoker, are you a propane guy, a charcoal guy, or a mesquite wood guy? That's good. That's different. Poncho in Texas. Gas. It's fast. It's powerful. Get it going. No cold spots. It's gas. Gas all day long. Hi, Jim. Terry Bradshaw and his family have a TV show on the E! Network called The Bradshaw Bunch. Would you ever consider a reality show for you and your family? Thanks, Bella B. in Calgary. I actually saw part of that show not long ago because that was my guy growing up, Terry Bradshaw. Bella, actually, you know, the story goes, years back, one of the producers or bookers or casting agents for the Housewives of Orange County got Janet's email address and said, we would like for you to do this. Are you interested? And my answer was like, no, that's literally the last thing I would ever do with my family. Not only am I not interested, it's the last thing. It was so absurd to me that I called my then agent at CAA. I'm with William Morris now, but I was with CAA for a number of years. And I just wanted to mess with my agent. I called him up and, you know, he should know that this was literally the last thing I would ever, ever do. Let cameras into my house and shoot me and my wife and my kids. I just absolutely abhorred the idea. I call my agent up and I say, hey, listen, the Housewives of Orange County want us to be one of the families on the show. I need you to get into this, man. Call them up, get into it, find out exactly what it entails, how much money I'm going to get for it, and let's do this thing. And I was just totally pimping him. I was just messing with him. He's like, yeah, all right. All right, I'll do that. I'm like, well, when? Right away, as soon as we hang up. I'm like, good, do that, all right? He's like, yeah, no, for sure. And I said, dude, are you kidding me? You know I would never do that. That's the last thing I would ever do in my life. And he's like, yeah, I thought so. I'm like, really? You thought so? Because you were going to hang up the phone and make the call. So would I ever consider doing it? No. No. Nobody's offering it right now because I think deep down they know we're kind of boring. But they were offering it back then. And the answer was a hard pass. Jimmo's, do you say sunglasses or shades? Is that kind of like market or store? I'm a sunglass guy. Sunglasses. At Hitman Canadian reacts, my preference for facial lettuce, mustache for the summer, but I grow a beard for the colder winter. Signed, Portland woman.
Well, you know what? We got this phenomenon up here in Oregon, and I call it Portland woman. Portland woman. She doesn't shave. She doesn't clean up. They put her on TV. Turn on any Portland channel with the local show. You'll find Portland woman showing off her stuff. Gray hair, no makeup, all the wrinkles to boot. And the clothing is something else. You can see the stain. So, anyways, to Portland woman, please, please do us all a favor and clean it up. That's all I got, Romy.
Portland woman. Dear Rome, that doctor who punctured Tyrod's lung gives us real doctors a bad name. Signed, chiropractors and dentists. Yeah, that's awkward. You imagine having a rib injury and trying to get a painkiller before the game, and the doc just sort of misses. I don't know, doc. It still hurts. And in fact, something else also hurts. In fact, I have more pain, not less pain. Like, exactly what did you shoot me up with? I mean, you're supposed to kind of numb me up a little bit, right? I'm supposed to be good for the next few hours, right? How come I feel way worse? Oh, the reason for that is I shot that painkiller directly into your lung, which caused an actual puncture. This is why both your rib and now your lung hurt and why you're not going to play today. Wait a minute, weren't we shooting me up so I could play? Well, that was the idea. That was the plan. But everybody has a plan, as Mike Tyson famously said, everybody's got a plan until the doctor shoots your painkiller directly into your lung and punctures it. Is that what Mike said? That is a wild story. So in the meantime, you imagine being Tyrod Taylor. That's a class guy and a class act. Can you imagine him having that happen to him and then watching the game and then watching the guy that they drafted to be the face of the franchise go out there and go right down the field and he's handling his business and all of Twitter is saying, that's it. Nice knowing you, Tyrod. Give Herbert the job. And all the while, Tyrod's just sitting there with a punctured lung because his doctor did it to him. Imagine what was going through that guy's head. That guy already has to work so hard to get any kind of respect whatsoever. And everybody's tearing him up on Twitter because he can't go and the kid just ripped his job and he should be there. Well, nobody knows exactly what happened. That it was a result of the team doctor trying to tighten him up. And instead, puncturing his lung. So again, this is why Anthony Lynn, I'm sure, said in part, no, Tyrod's still our guy. You're not supposed to lose your job to injury, especially if that injury is caused by your own team doctor. That's piling it on now, right? Hey, listen, man. You probably shouldn't have been starting anyway, but now that you've got a punctured lung, we can't do that. Isn't that how Drew Bledsoe went down? Like, with a lacerated kidney or something? Yet, try telling Drew that you don't lose your job to injury. But Drew Bledsoe's a class act, too, and he handled it. Man, Tyrod cannot get a break. And by the way, Herbert looked awesome. Awesome. Like NFL ready. 1-800-636-8686. How about a quick phone call? Let's go to Memphis. John in Memphis. It's good to have you. John, how are you?
Hey, John. I'm great, Rome. How are you doing?
I'm great. What's on your mind?
Left. Okay. Stab smack. Now you're trying to steal Slash's corner. Rome, he may have good delivery, but this dude just isn't actually funny. Let's just recap a couple of Left's funniest smack-off bits from last year, or actually this year. Putting babies in placenta receptacles, making fun of Mark for being good at singing. Steven Adams works at Disney World as a pirate named Captain Hookshot, suggesting that the audience at a wedding bid on the bridal party. Left, you're Eli Manning. None of your peers have ever thought you were actually good. Unwore Left's bunghole puckering when Brad has to pay the tab at Hennessy's next year because he spent all of his expendable income on the smack-off. Thanks, Jimmy. I'm out.
All right, John, here's the thing. You're right. That stuff isn't funny when you say it. But it is funny when Left says it. Now we're done. I want to remind you, episode 144 of the Jim Rome Podcast is a really good one. It's with Steve Smith Sr. We're going to push that out shortly. Make sure you look for it. My thanks to Kenny Moore of the Indianapolis Colts, Ryan Dempster, former MLB-er, MLB Network now, Jordan Hicks of the Arizona Cardinals. Look for that podcast. If you're already subscribed, you don't have to look. It will find you. If you're not subscribed, just do it once, and then you never have to worry about it ever again. My thanks to the XR4TI. Thank you for listening. Have a great day, and I will see you tomorrow right back here. Same time, same place. See you then.